Blog Talk Radio.
Evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Personal Transformation. My name is Stuart Thompson. I'm broadcasting live from the Gatehouse. And wow, I can't believe it. I'm looking at the time of the year it is, and we're already February the 8th. And winter is just sliding by here. I just hope it keeps sliding by really, really, really fast. Right now, we're definitely in the dead of winter here, that's for sure, in Toronto. I live a little bit north of Toronto, but nevertheless, it's very winter there as well. But I'm looking outside, and on my picture that I posted stating good evening from the Gatehouse earlier tonight on Twitter, I stated that, in my picture, you can see that there's lots of snow here. Lots and lots and lots of snow, and a lot more up north where I am, but it's amazing how you can go like maybe an hour from downtown or a half hour from downtown. Don't worry, I'm not going to get into talking about the weather and snow. It's going to be very, very quick. And there's that much more snow. But anyway, folks, I'm happy to be here, grateful to be here. I'm broadcasting live from the Gatehouse here at 3101 Lakeshore Boulevard, West in Toronto, or Old Etobicoke, as I always used to say. I'm here talking about child sexual abuse, the issues and the effects it had on me and everybody and my recovery. And let me point out very, very clear so you understand. I'm neither a therapist or a doctor or anything of the sort. I don't have a title that says I'm a doctorate or anything of the sort. I'm only here on my own, offering my own experience and my healing recovery. This is not here. This broadcast is not for therapeutic purposes whatsoever. It is just purely my experience and my experiences with the Gatehouse and my recovery. Just that simple, but not. But folks, really, really happy to be here. Lots of stuff going on. If you're happy to be listening, and this is going to sound really, really straightforward and coy, and maybe not very tasteful, but if you happen to have any spare change that you can send towards the Gatehouse, it would be greatly appreciated. The Gatehouse has been running since 1998. It's always relied on private donations from the public and grants if we're able to grab them. And we exist purely on that. We do not run on government funds whatsoever. So keep that in mind, please, when you are emptying your change onto a check and you're going to send it our way, if you wouldn't mind. We are purely funded just purely by donations and grants. We are not funded by the government. So everything we do here, we've done on our own and with the public's help. And might I may add, since 1998 or 20 years come this June. So we are a commodity in the community and a health commodity in the community as far as I'm concerned. We've helped many people. We've helped over 22,000 people since we've opened in 98, both men and women, right down to youth. So we've helped an awful lot of people here. Or rather, let me rephrase that. They've helped themselves. We've given a little bit of help here and there along the way, but basically, in my recovery, like everybody else who's come through the Gatehouse, our recovery has been our own recognizance, whether it's our own effort, our own sweat on the brow, if you want to put it that way. Everything has been done in that fashion. So if you want to heal, then you're gonna want to work. You have to work at it, and you want it bad enough, and then you'll get it. Like what's happening with me and everybody else I've seen come through here. So it's not an easy task. It wasn't easy coming here to begin with, and I'm still here after 7 years. So, I mean, that's a good thing, but obviously I'm obviously still healing in my own way, in my own journey, but I've come to do, well, rather I facilitate now, so therefore I'm only giving back what was given to me. And which is also given back to me every time I come here. There's always something. I always learn something new. There's never a day goes by that I don't come here and I don't have some kind of a bell go off and remind me of, okay, Stu, you need to work on this stuff, or you need to work on it a little bit more, or something along those lines, right? So for me coming here, even to this time, even at this time, it's still very, very important to me, obviously, to give back what was given to me, but for my own healing as well. When I came here, I was a very, very angry man. I mean, very, very angry man, like mainly with myself and the world, but that's where I was coming from. Okay, enough of that. So please, if you wouldn't mind, you know, send some of your spare change this way. We would greatly appreciate it to keep the house going. And everybody comes to the gatehouse here too. I should also point out too, before I stop this, is that we don't charge anybody. Everybody who comes here, there's do not charge any money. It's all free. And how we're able to do that is from the public donations. So keep that in your hat if you wouldn't mind. Last weekend, myself, Living with Abuse, or Nicola, and Jay and Caroline, we did another partners group. We had a total of, I guess it would have been around 15 or 14 people. It was very, very successful, and we're looking forward to doing it again, which will probably be, I would say, probably the beginning of, somewhere in March or April, we'll probably do it again. And looking forward to that. But we have some other things coming up. If you're at all interested in suicide prevention, the Gatehouse, in conjunction with Living Works, which where Brad was trained and I was trained, we are trained facilitators on their behalf. And we have a two-day course, which we offer to anybody who's interested. $190. If you're a student, I don't know, you'd have to call the Gatehouse and make some kind of arrangement so you give it a cut rate, but it's $190 for the 2 days. And in the 2 days, we give you, it's 16 hours, and you have to be there. You can't be an hour late or only do half a day. You have to be there the whole time. All the content that is learned in these 16 hours or the 2 days is so vital to what you do when you're done. So that's the only rule with that. You have to be there for those 2 days. And or 16 hours. But anyway, so the 3rd and 4th of March, we have all filled up. Now, our next available date is going to be doing it again in March, which will be March 24th and 25th. And we do have some space available there, but I'm telling you, we don't have a lot of space left. So if you're local or not local and you're interested in doing suicide intervention training for your company or your whatever your organization may be, then we can help you out along those paths. Brad and I have done quite a few of them, so we're pretty comfortable doing it and really like giving back to the public, hoping that that maybe it might save a life someday. And it's so important in the community, and there should be more of this out there. And I don't like using the word should, but it should, could be, and it ought to be, really. The idea is, you know, if you think about it, let's say you have 50 people. Out of those 50 people, you have 2 or 3 people that are trained in suicide intervention. That's pretty incredible, especially in your organization. If you work in the health industry, and depending on what area you are in, then having this type of skills is so vitally important. If you're a frontline officer, police officer, for example, another great example. If you are an ambulance or a school bus, rather I call it a school bus, an ambulance, I should say, and fire department, and frontline workers is really what I'm getting at. And other people in the health industry as well. It's so vitally important to have this and then to know the signs and to understand and helping people get through this. And who knows, you could save a life. Am I forgetting anything here? Probably, but that's all right. I'll come back and talk about it later on. But for the most part, well, tonight I'm going to be talking about my childhood sexual abuse. Well, and yours. Well, what does it really mean? And what I mean by that, let's talk about definitions in the law. For example, Canadian law, I'm going to talk about. Obviously, I can't talk about international, but I'm going to talk about right here and right now. And I'm also going to talk a little bit about recovery as well, the process along there, and some of the feelings and thoughts you may have through the process. And what happens if you're a survivor, and you want to take your offender to court? What's going to happen there? How are you going to deal with those emotions? I used Gomeshi trial not long ago as an example of what it could do to your emotions and what really could happen to you if you go up there into the stand. And I'm talking about a criminal trial now. I'm not talking about a civil trial. Let me be very clear about that. You go and... And basically what happens is you give your deposition before you go in. So the Crown is happy that you're going to do that. And then you go up there. And then all of a sudden the defense shoots you down, stating that you're calling you a liar and all kinds of things. I'm just giving you some fired examples of what potentially could happen. You know, and what also could happen, too, is you go right and you could lose. That's right. You could lose in the criminal court, right? And you could be re-victimized all over again. And what seems to be the trend now, and I can't say completely here in Canada, but I can say in the U.S. that this happens a lot of times, is that what will happen is that, yeah, they know, the lawyers know that you will not have a really good chance criminally, but civilly, in the civil court, you have a better chance of winning a judgment against your perpetrator. So that seems to be what's happening. And although in Canada, from my experience, and my experience talking with lawyers, because I know when I had Simone Jelinek in here before, she had, and I should get her in here again, considering what's been going on in the world and how messed up it is. And I should get her to, I would like to ask her to come in again, and we could talk about the procedures of what it's like for a victim to go to trial, whether it be criminal or through a civil trial, and talk about the experiences that you as an individual could possibly go through. Some of the stories I've heard from other people through the gatehouse that have gone through this has not been, well, there's been good experiences and there's been some bad experiences that I've heard. I've heard of one experience where one man I know, I obviously I can't say his name, but or where he's from or anything like that of the sort, but I know one experience in particular. I know one man wanted to have his perpetrator charged, and what ended up happening is that basically the judge just wouldn't go through with it. In other words, it went to court, and it was basically thrown out due to lack of evidence. And I don't get that, but one of the reasons were, I'm not, don't even quote me on what I just said in regards to lack of evidence, but anyway, the bottom line is that, rather the final line I should say, is that the person or the person that tried to convict the person in a criminal court, it didn't go through. Now, I don't know exactly all the whole story completely with what happened, but I know that it didn't happen. And I've heard of this happened to other people before as well. I'm sure if you pay close attention to the and you watch what happens in criminal court, you will see that this happens. Well, I won't say it happens all the time, but I know that in Ontario, for example, Ontario, Canada, our conviction rate is the lowest anywhere in Canada in regards to sexual abuse and rape. Now, some may be scratching your heads and going, well, what the heck's up with this? Well, that's a really, really good question. All I know is that as of last year, that was the case in this province, in this country. We're the lowest conviction rate out of any other province in Canada. For whatever reasons may be, could have been Gomeshi as an example. Who knows? I'm just speculating and not really even knowing. But these are the facts, though. That's what's happening. If you were to Google it online, and you would probably see, as I just disclosed to you, that this was publicized, stating what I've just stated. And it's not a fib or a lie or anything of the sort. This is a fact that we have the lowest conviction rate of any province in Canada. Rather kind of sad, considering that we are probably the largest populated province in Canada with the most amount of people, and yet we have a lower conviction rate of rape and sexual abuse. I still don't get that to this day, and I'm really trying not to think about it too much because it only just aggravates me in to no end. I know in 1983, the terms of rape and indecent assault were replaced with a three-tier structure sexual assault within the Criminal Code of Canada. One of the reasons for the reclassification was to reposition the acts of sexual violence as assaults, drawing attention to their physical and violent nature. This is a quote from Sinha in 2013. Furthermore, the term of sexual assault was chosen in order to better incorporate sexual offenses beyond forced penal, get this, vaginal intercourse, unwanted sexual touching, and gender exclusive. Not all victims are female, keep this in mind. Other important changes to the criminal code include restrictions to placed on admissibility of the victim's prior sexual history, for example, rape shield laws, and the elimination of immunity for sexual assault by a spouse. An additional purpose of this broadening of the criminal definition was to encourage victims to come forward to police regardless of their severity of their sexual assault. Now let me go over these levels one more time. Levels of sexual assault, now, like I said, this is according to the Criminal Code of Canada, not any other country, just Canada. Level one, any form of sexual activity forced on the other person, sexual activity without consent, or non-consensual bodily contact for sexual purpose, such as kissing, touching, oral sex, vaginal or anal intercourse. Level one sexual assault involves minor physical injury or no injury to the victim. Conviction for level one sexual assault is punishable by up to 10 years in prison. Okay, now that was just the lowest form that I talked about. And I would really like to see, I'll probably read on a little bit further here. I'll give you some more statistics, but Gomeshi is not a good example, but that's only at the top of my head. Level two, a sexual assault in which a perpetrator uses or threatens to use a weapon, threatens the victim's friends or family members, causes bodily harm to the victim, or commits the assault with another person, multiple assailants. Conviction for a level two sexual assault is punishable by up to 14 years in prison. Now, just because it says 14 years doesn't mean you're going to get 14 years. Well, in this country, I know, for example, if I was to throw in a gun, for example, that's an automatic 10 years. Well, 8 to 10 years anyway, with the new law, with the law that Harper passed back in, was it 2014, 2015, C-51, if I'm not mistaken. I stand corrected if I'm wrong. But in that law, the gun crime, they lifted it up. And in that same bill, what they did too as well, that if you done time while waiting for your conviction, your time in jail does not count. I thought I'd throw that in as well. So basically, your done time while waiting for your trial or conviction does not count. That's in Canada. Okay, finally, number three. Aggravated sexual assault. A sexual assault that wounds, maims, or disfigures a victim or endangers a victim's life. Conviction for level three sexual assault is punishable up to basically life, which is 25 years. That's what it is in Canada. And by the way, if you're really, really, if you need some help, I'm gonna give some props to Simone Jelinek right here now. If you're listening to this program and you're living in the Greater Toronto Area and you want some help, she's at 64 George Street, Toronto. I believe that's her new location. Because I know when last time I had her in here, they had a fire and they had to move to a new location. This is her new location, 64 George Street. And you can call 416-972-9506. Now, if you go on to Simone Jelinek's website and you'll see what she does. And she's got over 25 years experience doing this stuff. So she knows her stuff. Really knows her stuff. And I know she helps a lot of people here from the Gatehouse. She has over the years. Okay. So thinking about it, assessing the true prevalence of sexual assault in Canada is really a truly difficult to different ways that sexual assault data is collected. Statistics Canada relies on two data sources to track incidents of sexual assault. The Uniform Crime Reporting, or UCR, as it's abbreviated, the survey and general social survey, which is the GSS, which includes data on victimization. The URC survey tracks the number of sexual assaults reported to police and the GSS Canadians, whether they've been victims of sexual assaults, including assaults that they may not have reported to police. According to the data from the UCR in Canada in 2013, there were approximately 21,300 sexual assaults reported to police, which is like 98%, of which were classified as a level one, as I just talked about in the beginning. In the same year were 7,677 police reported sexual assaults in the province of Ontario. In both Ontario and Canada, generally, the rate of police-reported sexual assaults declined by 4% from 2012 to 2013. And this is a Boyce Quarter and Peru survey in 2014. The GSS, on the other hand, which is conducted a five-year intervals, a new GSS report will likely be published, well, which is 2015, which I'm reading right here and right now. So it may be 3 years out of date, and the last report that I received from statistics really hasn't changed a whole lot. If anything, the numbers have gone up a little bit, and I just don't have them right here in front of me. The GSS, on the other hand, okay, I've already did the cover there. Yeah, for 2009, most recent year, which was the GSS data, was available. There are approximately 677,000 incidents of sexual assault in Canada, or 24 incidents per 1,000 people who were 15 or and older, for 472,000, 70% of total of these sexual assaults, the victim was a female, and 87% of the perpetrators were male. So what I'm just reading here, what I'm just telling you to you as well, that really hasn't changed as far as that statistics is concerned. 87% of the perpetrators or the violators were male, and that really hasn't changed. Those statistics, it varies off. If anything, what's happened is it might even be up a few points. It might be down a few points. But when I last saw them, again, like I said, I don't have them right here in front of me, but they're pretty close, very, very similar. And also keep in mind, too, that the GSS report is done in five-year intervals. So I won't have a new report on that until 2020, so 2 years from now. Aside from the statistics related to the gender of the victims, there's a limited information within the GSS on the demographic characteristics of sexual assault victims. Sexual assault rates were almost twice as high for 15 to 24-year-olds as for 25 to 34-year-olds, and as many times higher than people who were 35 and older. People who identified as a single or as students had higher rates of sexual assault. Sexual assault victimization rates did not differ significantly based on household income. Aboriginal people experienced higher rates of sexual assault compared to non-Aboriginal people. And again, this is by a survey which was done in 2010 by Peru and Brennan. The GSS information reported by Statistics Canada does not include sexual assault rates of people with non-heterosexual orientations and does not include transgender identity category, such as part of the LGBTQ community. Parts of that will not be included in that if you didn't get that. As a URA survey and GSS statistics now show, there is a large difference between the number of sexual assaults reported to police and the number of actually taken place. Although these two surveys define only sexual assault in slightly different ways, making direct comparisons difficult, researchers eliminate that only 1 in 10 sexual assaults in Canada is reported by police. So that's really pretty bad when it comes right down to it. 1 in 10. Now, men, it would be a lot higher than that, obviously, because of the stigmas that fall behind being a man. But for women to have to go through this is pretty... it's pretty disgusting that they have to go through this. And you know, one of the biggest things, no different than a man, is that, you know, when that happens to you, your voice is taken away. And here you are, you're trying to get your voice back and trying to get some kind of justice for yourself. And you think about, out of the 10 people, out of those 10 people, I have a chance of not getting a conviction whatsoever. Or rather, I have a chance of not even coming forward because I know there won't be any conviction. Let me rephrase it in that term. Knowing that I don't want to be victimized, for one thing, which would be really, really good understanding. Why would I want to be victimized all over again? And not only that, but I wouldn't be believed. So going and seeing a detective and saying my story and not being believed, and these are the kind of stories that I've heard. Don't get me wrong. Not all cases are like this, but I know I've heard lots, And men, for example, we have a higher, or rather we have a less chance of a conviction rate than what women do. I know that for a fact. And that's only because of the stigmas that are attached to being a male. And don't get me wrong, it does happen, but not very often is my point. And as far as you can give me, if I can give you a number statistically, well, I can't really give you a number statistically, but I tell you, if you go and Google it in the U.S., you might find it there in the U.S. or in the U.K. or some parts of Europe. I honestly doubt that. Maybe in some parts of Europe where you might get those kind of statistics. Aside from the statistics related to the gender victims, there's limited information within the GSS on demographic characteristics of sexual assault. Okay, I think I've already covered that. Okay. Yes. So why are so many sexual deaths? This is what I was coming to. Why are so many sexual assaults not reported to police? Well, it's kind of like what I've been talking about. According to the GSS, victimization data, the most common reason victims of sexual assault gave for not reporting an accident to the police was because they felt not important enough, and I'm talking like 58%. That's like over half of the people. So that's pretty bad if you don't feel safe enough to go and to report what happened to you. Followed by the innocent, which was dealt with in another way, and that was, that was below 50% at 54. Actually, I shouldn't say below 50%, but just above 50% at 54%. The other common reasons given were that it was a personal matter. Now, that's below 50% at 47. And that the victim did not want to get involved with the police. And this is, again, it is under 50% at 41%. Situational variables may result in women not wanting to report the activity to the police. For example, 2009, 51% of the cases involved current and previous intimate partner or acquaintance or friend. Or research has found that having prior relationships with the assailant is associated with reducing likelihood that the victim will report the assault to the police. So if you didn't get what I was saying there, the likelihood, if you are involved with somebody and if you're involved with somebody and they may not want to come forward, is what I'm trying to say, and talk about it. There's lots of reasons why I would think a person would not want to come forward, and I kind of touched base it on in the beginning. And I guess the biggest reason of all, really, number one, would be that they don't want to be victimized again. And I've heard this time and time again, and it's sad, but it's true. And again, I can fall back on the Gomeshi trial as an example. Although, on the other hand, things are changing. That has really been a really bad example of what could be. But then, on the other hand, there's others that have done these crimes and that have paid dirty for it. Right now, for example, while we're waiting on Harvey Weinstein to see what happens there, that's going to be rather big and nasty if I can ever wrap my head around all that together, if that ever goes to trial. Never mind, he's been disgraced and he's a piece of crap now to the world. That's what they think. But nonetheless, that's the reality of it all. Okay, in national study of female rape victims in the United States, among those did not report the assault to police, the main reasons were given women were not reporting to the fear of reprisal. And we're talking like 68%, 68.1%. Okay, that's pretty high. Really, really, really high. The main reason given women were not reporting to the fear of reprisal, like I've talked about. Not wanting a family member to know, that's still pretty high too. That's almost 60% or 59.1%. Not wanting others to know, that's 57. Again, we're still over half, 57.4. Believing that it was not enough evidence to file charges, That's 51%, 51.1. And the fear of justice system, understandably so, 42.6%. Now, these studies are outdated by 7 years, but I would say they probably haven't really changed a whole lot. And if anything that it might have changed, and I'm looking at these numbers here now, whether it be Canada or the U.S., and I gave you statistically speaking for both sides, okay, people are coming out now. So people are more open to coming out. So I would say that the likelihood of people not being afraid of coming forward now has probably changed. Well, I won't say drastically, but I'd say it's changed enough that people will notice a difference, especially the courts. When they start seeing an onslaught of sexual assaults coming through the court system, then obviously there's something needs to be done, or something needs to change, or this needs to be addressed in a better manner than what's been addressed before. The prosecutors need to, well, or rather the Crown needs to change this by getting more convictions, so it may deter people from thinking like that. Granted, though, from my experience, this is only my opinion. Anybody I've ever seen charged with sexual assault, or people being charged with sexual assault, usually, unless they stay in the can, this is only my opinion. A lot of times they'll come out, unless they've had some kind of help, they're going to reoffend and put themselves back in again. And if you're looking at statistics, again, this is what I'm talking about statistically speaking here, which I'm probably going to get to a little bit later on here. Statistically speaking, offenders will reoffend again. And there's a lot of reasons why they do that again. And don't get me wrong, I'm not defending them or anything of the sort. What I'm talking about is that a lot of times is the offender does not have any course of help, is what I'm trying to say. Maybe they were abused themselves. Maybe they suffered some kind of trauma as a child, which just still doesn't give any excuses why you should carry on to adulthood. But my point being is that they've had something happen to them. I'm not saying that's the case in all cases. Some people are just straight right out wacky crazy, and they commit these crimes, and that's the end of it, right? But in some cases, I really believe that sometimes whatever has happened is that people, the trauma that occurred to them, they put it back on others. So what we call, I guess you'd call that learned behavior to a certain degree. Doesn't mean that it's right or it's responsible, but it means that whatever sort of trauma they've had in the past, they've carried it on to this day, and then they put it onto their victims, is really what I'm trying to say. So if you put those pieces together, and, there's lots of things can change. Lots and lots of things can change. Well, I mean, first off, the justice can do a lot more in regards to rehabilitation and fixing these guys, because really when it comes right down to it, right, I'm not going to get into a long conversation here about fixing these guys. I'm just making a point. Is that at the end of the day, something needs to be done with these blokes, right? You can keep them in locked up for all their lives, but really, you and I are paying for it. And really, what are we solving? Are we changing the culture? Not at all. Are we helping these guys? Even the ones that didn't, what justice deems as being not such a hideous crime, and therefore, we can keep these guys in the can, or incarcerated for X amount of time, then we're going to release them, then what are you going to do with them after that? How are you going to treat them so they don't reoffend? All these things need to come into play. You can put a bracelet on them and monitor them wherever they're going to go, but at the end of the day, you can't watch them all the time. You can't watch them all the time. Okay, enough of that. And like I put it, only a small percentage of sexual assaults reported to the police results in conviction. Now, I know that's the case in Ontario. I don't know about the other provinces, but I know they have higher conviction rates. A fundamental reason why many women choose not to report sexual assaults to police is that the probability that the complaint will eventually result in a criminal conviction is low. Using data that I've talked to you about from the 2002 GSS has shown that only a small proportion of sexual assaults reported to police by women results in conviction. So look at it this way. Okay, so if you have, let me just give you throw some numbers out to you. So we start at the bottom, and we have 15,200 women come forward, or rather, that have had that happen to them. So if you look at it this way, out of that 15,000, only 13,200, or 86.8%, or 13,200 people will report it as a crime. And out of that, okay, this is where it gets really changes drastically as far as numbers are concerned. Charges laid, 5,544. So that's out of 13,200. So 36.5% charges were laid. Okay, now prosecuted. Now this is where it gets even more stupid. And we're talking 18.6%. So prosecuted at 2,824. Now, this is where it really gets bad. Now, let's talk about a conviction rate. We're talking about a 10% conviction rate. So out of those 15,000 people, if you get, according to our statistics, is that we that 1,519 people will have a full conviction, or 10%. So, if sexual assault is reported to police, they have the duty to investigate. Upon investigation, the police may have to decide that this report is unfounded, meaning that there is not enough evidence to pursue any further investigation. Research has found that reports of sexual assault are more likely to be deemed as unfounded compared to an investigation of other types of crime. If charges are laid, they may be dropped for a number of reasons. Okay. Number of reasons, including the victim, that the victim chooses not to proceed, or the police conclude that they do not have reasonable grounds to pursue the charge, or if it's concluded that the evidence is insufficient to obtain a conviction. Only half of sexual assault charges and results of the criminal prosecution. In addition, just over half of sexual assaults are prosecuted and results in a conviction. More recent statistics in Canada, data indicated, as I'm indicating to you, in 2012, 41% of sexual assault cases were brought to the court resulted in a guilty decision, and corresponding with figure, like I was talking about in Ontario, in 35%. So, let me one thing I should be very, very clear. Thank you, Maria. I know you're listening here. She just gave me some really good information here. Okay. There are 460,000 sexual assaults in Canada every year. Out of 1,000 sexual assaults, 33 are reported to police, 29 are recorded as a crime, 12 have laid charges, 6 are prosecuted, 3 lead to conviction, and 997 assailants walk free. Now, according to this, I'm looking at this, and I think this is from the YMCA of Canada. I think so. But this is really, really good. So I'm just going to retweet this. Take a look at this, people. Awesome. Thank you, Maria. And she just sent me something else here. Okay, yes. Okay, the focus, the figures are in the focus. Okay, let me see if I can bring this out a little bit so I can read a little bit better. Oh, there we go. Okay, the figures are in focus. The aftermath of sexual assault amounts in an estimated $4.8 billion per year. Here are some costs incurred. Okay? Remember, this is the cost of victims. Okay? So medically, we're talking $113 million. Lost productivity, $211 million. I know I've seen these statistics, and I'll probably have them in here someplace, but I know I got this from before, but thank you, Marie. This is so important to what I'm talking about. Pain and suffering, $4.3 billion. And that may even be a little bit underestimated when you look at the big picture. the cost to society, the criminal justice system, $150 million. Social services, $32 million. Employer and employee losses, $18 million. Now, these are from Department of Justice, 2009. So basically, actually, a lot of this stuff that I'm talking about here is I probably coming from right from what I've got here. But thank you, Maria. I know she sent, just sent me something else. Let me just retweet this one as well. Thank you. And what else did she just send me? Maria, you're the best. Ah, thank you, Maria. Thanks for listening. And thanks for sending me those things. A little more tip. I do have a bunch of stuff here in front of me. And I think it's coming pretty much from the same report. The only thing I might be missing is what the last one you gave me. But I know they're very similar to what I'm reading here now. There's slight variations, but they're very similar. And as I stated a little bit earlier in my broadcast, that the statistics for as far as people coming forward now, I think are going to change, are going to be drastically different from last year to this year, meaning that the numbers are going to go up, only because people are coming forward with it more. So these statistics that I'm reading to you now, when this is done again, the GSS report is done again in 2020, are going to be are going to be really different in comparison to other times that it was done. Let me see here now. Okay, thanks. Okay, I guess that's good. Well, another thing to look at too is police reports are likely underreport the severity of many sexual assaults. And this is so true because I know from people that I've come across my path, whether it be here at the gatehouse or outside the gatehouse, where I've heard about their stories on severity of what they've gone through and what they're actually able to go to tell anybody or to put in front of the courts understated, I guess is what I'm really trying to say. As noted, as I've said below, or rather previously, sexual assaults sustained and reported by Canadian Police Services in the UCR is only 98% recorded as a level in one, in level one as they reported in the beginning. And if you remember what level one it was when I started, level one is, let me just go back at it again here. Level one is any form of sexual activity forced upon another. Sexual activity without consent or non-consensual bodily contact, and contact for a sexual purpose. And that includes kissing, touching, oral sex, vaginal or anal intercourse. Level one sexual assault involves minor physical injury or no injury to the victim. Conviction for level one sexual assault is punishable up to 10 years in prison here in Canada. Other data, however, suggests that this may not be the case for the point and other explanation for the relative decline in the proportion of sexual assaults recorded by police, that there are more several compared to level one sexual assaults. Participants in the self-report of the GSS indicate that all more likely to report sexual assaults to police if it involves more severe physical violent sexual attack. It is noteworthy that while the proportion of sexual assaults recorded by police as level two or level three have been declining, the percentage of victims in the GSS who reported that their sexual assaults involved declining, the percentage of victims in the GSS who reported that their sexual assaults involved the use of threats or physical violence remained unchanged at 19%. And this is like from 2004 to 2009. And again, these statistics are a little bit out right now, but I know they're not far off from the last report I saw on this. What I just read to you was actually pretty close to what I'm talking about. Where am I? Okay. In analysis in 2007 revised, the Uniform Crime Recording survey by Johnson and Johnson in 2012 found that sexual assaults classified as level one, 2% involved the use of a weapon such as a firearm, a knife, or a blunt object, and 17% resulted in physical injury. In other words, these findings suggest that about A fifth of sexual assaults that were classified as level one may have been more appropriately been classified as a level two. So if you're not getting what I'm saying here, is that rather than classifying what could have been perceived as a weapon assault, was then reclassified it, which is what I'm talking about, a level two assault now, or rather two classification, bumped to a level one. So basically what it means is that instead of getting 20 years, or rather, 20 years, or 15 years, they're going to get 10 years for their crime. And it won't even be all that anyway, with our justice system being the way it is, for time served and all that sort of stuff, although that's changed. Okay. Now, let's move on to something that's, again, is still equally as bad, a drug-facilitated sexual assault. Drug-facilitated sexual assault can be defined as an offense which victims are subjected to non-consensual sexual activity while they are incapacitated or unconscious due to the effects of alcohol and or drugs and are therefore unable to resist or give consent. Although reports of public awareness of drug-facilitated sexual assault have increased in recent years, only a few studies have sought to precisely determine the percentage of sexual assaults that involve drug facilitation and the types of drugs used. Investigated possible drug-facilitated sexual assault among 882 people, meaning 97% female, presenting to the hospital-based sexual assault centers in Ontario. I'm talking about Ontario only now. Participants were designated as having been victims of drug-facilitated sexual assault. If they reported a suspicion of having been drugged in a combination with one or more of 16 associated symptoms, or a total completed amnesia or loss of consciousness, paralysis, confusion, drowsiness, using the criteria completely, using this criteria, 20.9% of sexual assaults were designated as a drug facilitated, or the most at 20.9% of the sexual assaults were designated as drug facilitated. The most common substance detected in toxicology screening of participants were alcohol, at like 30.9%. Alcohol, but no other drugs were present in 12.9% of the cases. In cannabis was like 33.7%, cocaine was 21.4%, amphetamines was only like, we're getting down there, at 7.3%, MDMA, again, down at 7.13%. Anxiety medication, like lorazepam, for example, was found in 6.2% of the cases, and antidepressant clonazepam, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, in 6.7%. Ketamine and GHB were found in 1.1% of cases. Flurazepam, if I pronounce that correctly, which is most often thought to be a drug commonly used in drug-facilitated sexual assault, was not found in any of the cases. So, which is kind of strange because it's probably because it's harder to get. Cocaine and all those other drugs, the other type of amphetamines, those are all street drugs. They're very easy to get. So research suggests that approximately a fifth of the sexual assaults are drug-facilitated, and there are a variety of drugs, including alcohol, used as a base for perpetrators to incapacitate their victims. So, they're not just using street drugs and some clinical drugs, but they're also using alcohol, and alcohol actually being the drug the biggest at 30%. So when I think about it, and I think about my drunken stupors and all the things I've done in the past, well, that makes probably a lot of sense, where 30% would be a very high rate. And from my experience and what I've heard from others, oh, definitely, definitely. Okay, well, let's talk a little bit now about the frontline responses to sexual assault. Due to high prevalence of sexual assault, frontline public health professionals may encounter clients who have been victimized. Frontline staff can play an important role as an initial confidant and or individual support system, especially for victims who choose not to report an assault to the law or enforcement. The Ontario Coalition of Rape Crisis, which is at the, which you can go www.sexualassaultsupport.ca, provides a wide range of suggestions for supporting individuals who disclose that they have been sexually assaulted. These include, okay, protect the client's confidentiality and inform them that you will do so. Do not conduct an investigation except and believe that the client discloses. Listen empathetically and non-judgmentally. Tell the client that they had that a sexual assault is never a victim's fault. Do not give personal advice, like if you could, or you would, or you should, or any of that kind of stuff. Do not call police against the victim's wishes unless you are, you know, unless you are specifically mandated to do so by the victim. Suggest options for actions, well, legal, counseling, other support. But let the idea is to let the client decide what's best for them. It's not for them to do it, or even what we do here at the Gatehouse. We don't tell people what they should do. It's that's up to them to do what to do. It's on their own. It's all on their own decision what course of action they're to take, whether to go to the police, whether to go seek medical help, whatever the case may be. But it's all up to them, and there's no shoulds here. As someone working in the front line, let's say to whether you be a police officer or somebody working with the fire department or the arms, frontline workers is what I'm trying to say. Any one of the above that I just mentioned. The idea behind them is to have really good empathetic listening skills so that they have it, that they can at least get them from the crime scene, if I can put it in that term, to a point of safety where they can actually talk to somebody and feel safe. That's our responsibility as a frontline worker, right? Being aware of sexual assault services in your community that victims can access is especially helpful. Like, for example, now in Toronto, the Toronto Police Victim Services Guide for Sexual Assault Survivors provides information about criminal justice for victims who are making a decision about reporting to the police. Now, there's all kinds of things here for the ladies out here that if you want help that you can go on. I mean, if you're in the Greater Toronto area, well, obviously you can go to the Toronto Police Victim Services. You can go right to the website, the torontopolice.ca /publications, Guide for Sexual Assault Survivors. It's the PDF file that they have there. Toronto Rape Crisis Center, Multicultural Women Against Rape. There's a 24-hour crisis hotline there. 416-597-8808. Ontario-wide Assault Women's Helpline, 1-866-873-0511. And again, if you've been assaulted within the last 72 hours, you can call, or you can also call 416-323-6040. Again, the Women's College Hospital for Sexual Assault and Domestic Violence Care Center, again, you can call 416-323-6040. Out in Scarborough, you go to the East End, Scarborough Hospital Sexual Assault Domestic Violence Care Center. You can call 495-2555, and that's out in Scarborough. Now, if you're to the West, Peel Region, Sexual Assault Domestic Violence Program at 905-848-7580. And obviously, this is 9 to 5 hours. You'd have to call, and you go extension 2142, and I'm sure somebody will be happy to help you there. Now, let's go a little bit east again and north. We'll go to Richmond Hill, Thornhill, up, heading towards Newmarket. And then Newmarket, Keswick, and Barrie, all the way up that way. So 905-848-7580, extension 2142. And I imagine that this would be between the hours of regular business hours between 9 to 5. And in Richmond Hill, there's also a domestic abuse sexual assault center you can call. Actually, that's where I was. I think I did a little boo-boo here. I read the same number twice. What I meant to say was Richmond Hill Domestic Abuse and Sexual Assault Care Center is actually 1-800-521-60044. The one I repeated twice was actually the Scarborough House Sexual Assault and Domestic Violence Center. I got a little carried away there, so I apologize. So finally, again in the Greater Toronto Area, I'm talking Durham Region. So way east of here, heading towards Ottawa, Montreal, Cornwall, Kingston, down the line, heading east. Durham Region Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Center, 905-571-3344, extension 116. Okay, so as you can tell, in the Greater Toronto Area, we have lots of places you can go. Lots of places you can go where you can get help. It's just a question of if you have, you know, if you have the courage to pick up that phone and give them a call. And, you know, I imagine some of these you can call. I mean, you can call and, you know, if you don't want to have to give your name, you want someone to talk to. Well, that's what these people are there for. And they're there to help you in that aspect. So at least there's some doors to go to. As far as men are concerned, well, I already don't have a whole list of places for men to go here in front of me, other than, well, you can come to the Gatehouse. There is some centers in Toronto. I wish I had kind of prepared that more so for the men, but I have not done so. I'm just kind of talking about the crime in general, and I just happen to have this information in front of me when it comes to making reference to where you can get help as far as women are concerned. And I'll do my best because I don't know how much is out there other than coming to the Gatehouse. And I think there might be something else downtown. And in fact, if there is, it's escaped my mind right off the top of my head. In regards to if you're a male and you were raped is what I'm getting at. You can come here if you were violated as a child or you're sexually abused as a child at the Gatehouse. But as a man and you're raped, you know, we can help you out here to a certain degree, but we don't focus on that. We focus on helping you with your childhood sexual abuse, not as a grown male who's lived through rape. Granted, we can help to a certain degree, but we can refer you to some other place. I just don't have the information here in front of me, so forgive me for not having that. So let's move another direction a little bit here now. And this is more towards children, I guess, and about telling secrets and trusting people. And this is more for the children. My message is not that there'd be any children missing, listening, but if there was, this would be for them. Sometimes people we love and trust ask us to keep secrets. This can be confusing, especially if you've been told by other adults not keeping secrets at all. No one should tell you to keep a secret about a touch of any kind. A touch, even if it's nice and soft, should still never be kept a secret. No secrets about touch is what I'm getting at. So now I'm going to be talking about boundaries for your children, like good skills to talk to your children about touching, for example. This is one of the first little parts that I got to. It's important to trust your feelings, especially when you're in a tight spot or in a tricky situation. Our feelings, which are also sometimes called our intuition, is our body way of alerting us when we're feeling something, you know, that isn't right. The feeling can make itself known to us in many different ways. For example, you might get a funny feeling in your stomach or a tightness in your shoulders. Everyone feels an intuition in their body in their different ways. It's important to listen to your intuition because, well, it could protect you. If you have a bad, we talk about our gut feelings sometimes. And even as a child, we have gut feelings. I don't remember that much, that's for sure. The difference between a secret and a surprise. It's confusing to someone. Let me start over here again. It's confusing when someone tells you to keep a secret and someone else tells you it's about a surprise. How do you know the difference? Well, a surprise is something that everyone will know after a period of time, and it takes generally takes people feel good. A secret is something that no one is supposed to know. It might make you feel bad, mad, sad, or confused. The most important thing to remember is no one should ask you to keep a secret about touch. Telling secrets. The truth is, it can be very hard to bring a secret out into the open. It is difficult to speak up when you've been told not to. If someone has told you to keep a secret about touch, and touching problem is likely going to get bigger and bigger if you don't tell, it's important to tell the secret if you can. If you tell someone adult and you trust and they don't listen, then tell another one. Keep telling until you get help you need. Never give up. Sometimes the tricky situation you are in feels too complicated to tell someone about it. Don't blame yourself for not being able to tell the right away. Keeping a secret can make you feel alone. Talking to someone about your feelings may make you feel better. Always remember that it's not your fault. You're not to blame for what's happening to you. Tell as soon as you can. You know, I'm going through this here, and I'm realizing, you know what, this doesn't just have to be for kids, you know. This could be for adults as well. You know, it doesn't have to be just for kids, really, when it comes right down to it. Granted, as an adult, I couldn't imagine, well, I shouldn't say that. I couldn't imagine at all. I know that I've read stories where, you know, where women have been raped and where they were told that if they, it's the same thing actually as a child, but probably more because you understand. Rather, I shouldn't say that. It probably equally is terrifying. I really couldn't imagine because I'm not a woman for one thing, so how would I know? But if you're told at gunpoint, for example, or you're told, period, that if you tell anybody that your family's going to get hurt and you're going to get hurt, then all the more reason why you're going to keep your mouth shut. I totally, totally get that. Then on the other hand, if you do keep your mouth shut, then your rapist or the perpetrator basically wins. And what I've learned from my experience as being a survivor of childhood sexual abuse is I kept this secret for probably almost 50 years. And who won? He won. Well, until I started talking about it. So I was groomed to keep my secrets for all those years. So think about it. Now, you know how empowering that was for me when I found the gatehouse and was able to come in here and actually say my story about what happened to me? Now, I'm not talking about all the nasty stuff. I'm talking about just the fact that it happened to me, right? And that I've lived through it and all the other experiences that came on top of that. Trying to struggle through life. I can't really see it would be any different from an adult getting that happen to them to this day. You know, once you get traumatized on however brutally you were, you know, violently sexually assaulted, well, who the hell would want to even talk about that? Who the hell would even want to come forward? Who the hell is going to believe you? Who the hell would you trust? You know, all those things come into factor. You know, and really as an adult, when I come to think about it, I can't really see how that it would change a whole lot from being a child to being an adult. You know, your assailant, for example, rather your offender will do anything possible so that he will not be found. Everything from covering up your face to covering up his DNA in any possible way so he can't be found. You know, as an adult and being raped, I think the perpetrator has a better chance of being caught because as an adult, well, depending on the individual, most of us or we will report it, and some don't. From my statistics I told you, there is, I think it was 41%. Actually, that's a pretty high percentage now, isn't it? They don't report it. So when it comes to childhood sexual abuse, think about that now. How many people have not come forward after all these years? I mean, I didn't come here until I was 49. So, that's a lot of years. And I was only a child. So, think about it as, look at it from an adult's perspective. Well, I as a child, I did all this all these years. And I'm not saying they're all the right things, but I did all this all these years to help protect myself. Now, here I'm an adult, and it happened. And how am I supposed to react and you know, protect myself? Really good questions. Trusting people or trusted people. When you have a problem, it is important to find someone who you can help. We can go different people for many different problems, but try to think of at least three people that you can go to that if you've had a problem or won't worry. Make sure you know how to contact them. If the person you would like to talk to is not available, doesn't hear or hear what you have to say, who would you go to next? The important thing is to keep telling until you get help you need. Well, nowadays, I would believe that statement. I think you can pretty much tell people until somebody will believe you. And I have honestly believe that today, this day, and from this day forward, I honestly believe that people will believe you more so than what they might have believed you a year ago or 2 years ago or 3 years ago or longer than that. Now to get help. If you don't have anyone you can talk to or know to say, there are people that will believe you and want to help you with your problems. One place to start is the kids' help phone, which I'm going to talk about. You can go there, and if you have children and they need a little bit of help, you can go. Actually, you can go to kidshelpphone.ca, and up to the age of 20, and you can get help there. And again, whether you're a child or whether you're an adult, don't give up until someone hears your story. I had to throw this in here. Someone's locked in here. Ha ha. Don't mind me. I'm just making fun of one of our students that just came in here and tried to get out and couldn't get out. I won't say the person's name, though. But anyway, okay. So, there's my message tonight, folks. I'm talking about sexual assault. I went to extreme. And you know what I should do? I really need to do more on this. I really love to do a little bit more about this. So I really think, I think what I'm going to do, I'm hoping that I can do this within the next month or so, is I'm going to get Simone Jelinek to come back in here again and talk about this in regards to what you can do in regards to, you know, if you want to make if you would like to do a civil conviction against your perpetrator, or she can even help you in your criminal. I know she does both ways. I know she specializes in civil, but she also does criminal as well. I thought and think that the stuff I'm talking about tonight is very, very valuable information in regards to what one might think about actually trying to come forward about what happened to them in regards to whether you feel that you're going to be treated fairly or you're not going to be treated fairly. Judging if I'm going to, you know, statistically speaking, that's what it's been all evening since I started the show. It's all been all statistics. Well, you can take the statistics with a grain of salt, and you can kind of just go, well, you can look at social media, for example. You can look at what's being played on mainstream TV and what you're hearing on radio, and just listen. Listen to what people are saying. Listen to what people are coming forward about in regards to, well, if you make the news, there's usually something bad has happened. That's my point. So all I know is that in the news daily, there's always something, right? And in doing so, well, the more I hear in regards to the media reporting about this stuff, it means that, well, one, probably the biggest thing is that people are more aware of what's going on. It's not good news, but it's bad news. But at the same time, it's making people aware that that this stuff is happening. And well, it needs to be cleaned up, right? And I'm being very polite with my words here right now, but that's basically kind of what sums it up. As far as changing the laws are concerned and making tougher sentences, well, I think that I agree that could be done, but at the same time, they need to do it at the same time. They also need to figure out what they're going to do with these people when they put them in jail. Because you can only keep so many, you only have so many jails, you only have so much space, you only have so much money. So in order to deal with these people so you can either rehabilitate them and put them back in society, well, I guess in a lot of cases you wouldn't want that anyway, because you know, if you're above a type one, as I mentioned, you've probably got some real issues going on. And again, by me saying what I've just said means that I'm judging. I really don't mean to judge, but especially since that's not my role, is to judge. But what I'm saying is that I think what we need to do in our system, at least in our Canadian judicial system anyway, and maybe other countries as well, they need to take a deeper look into the whole idea behind sexual assault. And I mean all aspects of it, including childhood sexual abuse. Violence towards men, violence towards women. Mainly it happens towards women and it happens towards children. It's happening more and more towards adults, or rather towards men nowadays than it ever used to be, or rather more only because more are reporting it. I don't know if the numbers have changed in regards to that's concerned, because most men just don't say nothing. And who would want to? Well, I'll be honest with you, if I was in jail and I got raped in jail, well, you know what? If I'm in jail to begin with, I must have done something pretty, pretty bad to begin with. And although being raped in jail, I don't know if that really justifies the crime or if that's the right kind of punishment. But all I know is that no one deserves that, not even in jail at all. I mean, if anything, you've already had all your rights taken away from you, and that's one right that was kind of taken away from you as well. So just to be forced to do something that that you don't want to do, whether you're a man or a woman, it makes no difference. There's no just cause for it. No justification for it. No one should ever have to live through that experience and then have to deal with it after for the rest of their life. Then that's what happens, because once that's done to you, depending on how traumatic it was, you're screwed for the rest of your life. Well, I'm being really dramatic here in my choice of words, but I mean by that is that your sense of reality has changed drastically, is what I'm trying to say. So your sense of reality is screwed. It's gone a different way. Your trust in people has gone out the door. You know, what you may have believed in before, you may not believe in now, because it's all gone out the door because of what happened to you. So a lot of things need to change. I'm really not one to change the laws, or all I know is that I can't change the laws. All I can do is put it out there and, you know, hopefully things will change and advocate the best I can. But all I know is until they make changes in regards to what they're going to do with these people when they throw them in jail, is my point that I'm getting at, things will not change. In other words, there'll always be pedophiles, there'll always be rapists out there, and until we find a way to treat them when they're incarcerated so that they are released back in the general population, then we don't have to worry about them reoffending. So in order to change that, we need to fix that. And right now, that's not fixed. It's far from being fixed. You know, you get guys like Paul Bernardo, for example. Well, he'll never get out of jail. He's in there until the day he dies. Now, that's one of the sickest people you can ever think of as an example of, you know, I'm still scratching my head why, speaking of justice, made a deal with his partner, she should not have been released out at all whatsoever. But anyway, again, this is only my opinion, and that's all I'm giving you right here right now in regards to this. But come 2019, 2020, time for changes. Well, hello, Mr. Paul.
Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm not bad, not bad. So Paul Dunn, our male coordinator and phase two coordinator,
that's it, yeah.
Has brought me in a coffee, and you haven't done that in weeks since you have been around.
I have not been around. I was on vacation in Acapulco.
Acapulco. So how was that?
It was wonderful. It was a really nice time to sort of unwind and just reconnect with my partner and just relax, take in some sun, get away from the cold. It was great. Mm. And more importantly, it's taken me years to realize that I deserve it.
That's awesome.
That's a big one, yeah.
You
I do.
Deserve that.
Absolutely.
And how did you come up with that?
Took a lot of, took a lot, really. A lot of insight, realizing, you know, why I beat myself up for, why I don't feel worthy, you know. I mean, for years, and what it really comes down for me is that I own some of my abuse. That's what I was doing.
What do you mean?
Well, even though I know logically, it's never my fault.
Mm-hmm.
I was a child.
Yeah.
But somehow I felt that I was, you know, because I had abuse from my uncle. I had abuse from my own mother.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of physical abuse as well. But I always thought I was, excuse my language, but the shittiest kid around, because why were the people that were supposed to love me and help me, you know, nurture me,
mm-hmm.
hurting me like that? And so I took it on as I wasn't a good kid.
Mm-hmm.
And so I somehow deserved this.
Mm-hmm.
And that kept with me for years and years and years. And so little things like buying new clothes, I never did. I'd go to the secondhand shop,
yeah,
and pick up whatever,
mm-hmm.
you know, going out and just, you know, buying something nice for myself, I would never do.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Going on trips. I mean, I used to do it, but, you know, not from a healthy place.
Yeah.
And then, you know, for the last, man, I guess I went away last year, and that's when I really realized I did a real soul search, and it was tough because I remember last year getting ready, just feeling like something's going to go wrong, or, you know, do I really deserve this? Without really those words, just that feeling of dread, like I shouldn't be doing this.
Yeah.
And it was a fight the whole time. But it was an exercise to say, no, I do deserve good things. I didn't ask for any of this. And I am a deserving person. So it was a lot easier this year, you know, which I did it last year and I went through it. And I really did. As I talked to you about it afterwards,
yeah.
It was a real, almost like an insight, life-changing.
Mm-hmm.
It was the second last day when I was in doing some scuba diving and never done in my life and got bashed up against the rocks and all that kind of stuff.
I remember that, yeah.
And I just I just started beating myself up and I started crying and it just all this stuff really came out. It was a really cathartic experience.
Mm.
It was cheaper than any therapy, but it was really like for 4 hours racking sobs just
–
letting all this stuff that I was holding
yeah.
on out.
And
it really has kept with me since then. So now, anytime, so that's how deep it was. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so now this time, or even beyond there, when I catch myself beating myself up, I stop and go, why are you doing this? Right? And if I have to, I'll go to a mirror and tell myself all the reasons why I deserve good things and I don't deserve to be beaten up for things. So.
Now, can I ask you a question related
sure.
to what you're talking about?
Yeah.
How hard was that for you to do that for yourself?
Oh.
Now, I'm talking
yeah.
more from a male perspective here now because there's obviously a difference between a male and a female, but males are so hard on ourselves.
Yeah.
Is my point.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm asking you that.
Absolutely. It was a really tough thing. And like I said, it's like I almost had a breakdown. I almost had one. I had one down there last year when I was away and on vacation. And it was really had a very supportive partner who just held me. And it all came out. You know, it's like, and it was like guttural. It was like my inner child finally let go.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I was just bawling and going, why did they do this to me? And, you know, it's, you know, all that kind of stuff, just feeling that. So that was really cool. That was really great. It was like, I think it was one of those pivotal moments along my journey.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, yeah, so this year it was really simple. You know, it was around, I guess, the American Thanksgiving when they had that Black Friday thing.
Yeah.
I went, you know what? I think I'd like to go away again this year.
Mm.
And I looked and said, let's see if we can find a deal. We found a great deal. And I just went, yeah. And this time there wasn't that feeling of dread. It was just enjoyment. I had a much easier ride down on the plane, had a great time while I was there. I really spent the time just reconnecting with my partner. We had traveled there once before 14 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the gap between it, right? And so we went and saw some of the old places. That's when we first got together. And me and her, you know, had a little kiss on the beach where
yeah.
a little private beach. And,
yeah.
Yeah. So, no, it was wonderful. But just getting back to the whole beating yourself up.
Yeah.
So last year was a great awareness of that. The whole cathartic experience. And really realizing that this is where it's coming from. So when I start feeling that way, I say, and I've done this, I've gone to a mirror and looked in my own eyes and go, it wasn't your fault. And it, I almost get teary. It wasn't your fault. You did nothing wrong. You don't deserve that. So that's a really great one. But here's the interesting thing. Because we, as a male, I've been doing this my entire life,
mm-hmm.
right? I, believe it or not, found really new and innovative ways to beat the hell out of myself. And I've caught myself a couple times doing it.
Now, is this from your trip, you mean? Or
no,
that?
This was after the trip.
After the trip. Okay.
Because I was so aware, and then so I wouldn't let that happen, I'd come in another way at it, you know?
The left hook, right?
Exactly. Yeah. You do the left hook that I'm not looking at, it, yeah. right? And then it was kind of like after a couple of weeks, I'm like, wait a minute. Oh, my goodness. I'm doing the same thing, just a different way. So it's been a great journey of awareness. And I think for myself, can't talk for any other man, but for myself, really being hyper-vigilant of why I'm beating myself up and when I'm doing it. And then I stop. That's being really helpful. You know, it's just, it takes that kind of being in the background, not feeling that you want to be a part of things, not feeling that you deserve things, and it's just sort of dissipated.
Hmm.
So I'm feeling a lot more healthier now.
That's great.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
still
great.
Tons of way to go, but
oh, yeah.
just another little tick off the
off the bucket list.
Yeah,
there,
off the bucket list. Mm-hmm. So who knows? I may find different ways to beat myself up, but hopefully, and that's what I say about this journey for me,
hmm.
right? There's no magical ending. There's no, wow, touch me with a magic wand, cured. There's no curing.
Mm-hmm.
I went through some hellish stuff as a child, and I think it's always going to be with me. The difference is now is that I process my emotions rather than suppress them.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, it's, I don't want to say it never goes away, but what I've done is I found different ways to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes up, yeah, when it comes up, I'm not afraid anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I used to do a lot of drugs sort of when it came up because I didn't want to think about this.
Yeah.
So get really screwed up and you wanted to think about it, you know, and all the other things. But now I welcome it when it comes. It's like, you know, wow, this big piece is out. And,
yeah.
You know, like, why am I doing this? And I'll sit down and process it. And then that way I'm not really falling into old behaviors anymore.
Mm.
And I just feel a lot better about it. So.
That's right.
So I guess it's never kind of going to go for me,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't affect me the way it did.
You know, and if there's any other men that are listening to this, whether it be now live or in the podcast in the future, please listen to this very, very carefully because you got to try to understand. And don't get me wrong, Paul, I don't hope you don't take this as an insult,
yeah.
but for myself too, I'm speaking, we're not young men no more. And,
no.
And what I mean by that, I mean, we're not old, but at the same
I
time,
am.
Well... You're not old, but anyway, neither am I. But the point being is, when you're stuck with the same habits for many, many years, I'll leave it at that, okay? And you find a way, and you see it, and it's logical to you, does not mean that it's going to happen just overnight. You need to work at it, until you finally have an epiphany like Paul had and realize, oh my God, what's going on? And you move forward. So it is possible.
Absolutely. And look at this. My abuse started when I was 4. You know, because you were here when I walked up here at 54.
Yeah.
So that was 50 years of just suppressing and screwing it up or screwing myself up.
Mm.
Now, I figure when I got here, 3 weeks tops and I'll be fixed.
Yeah. So I said 7 years ago.
It takes 50 years in the making. I'm pretty sure it's going to take a long time to unwind it. But it just, you know, as the stuff comes up. So here it is for me. Awareness. Mm-hmm. Insight into myself.
Yes.
Comes from meditation, comes from, you know, just sitting down, practicing gratitude, practicing pause, trying to track back where it's all coming from. You know, when I get a trigger coming, and I can now recognize a trigger because I never could before until I was so triggered it was too late. Now I look at it in my body. My triggers give me it feels like a punch right here in the gut.
Yeah. Totally,
and so when that feeling comes up, I go, hold on, whatever I'm doing, I back away, take some breaths, go and meditate. But what's going on? Where's it coming from?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's, you know, there you go. Because it's not the anger or it's not the rage or anything like that. It's the action.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so what I try to do is what we say here is expand the space between anger and action until I can have a healthy response to it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's about it. Yeah. Anyway, because I've been on vacation, I got a ton of work to do. Let me say.
Thanks for the really great coffee.
Anytime, bro. I've
really good coffee. Whoever made that did a really good job.
And I love your program as always.
Thank you.
For all the survivors out there, just keep moving forward.
Keep moving forward. You know,
when you're stuck, don't worry about it. Just stay there for a while, take a look around, and figure out what key you need to get through that door.
Mm.
All right.
Thanks, Paul. Have a good one.
Thanks, for all you do, Stuart.
Hey, you're welcome. Thank you too. There you go, folks. Thanks, Paul, for bringing me this beautiful coffee, which is really, really good. I don't know who made it, but they're really good job. And I'm a real coffee connoisseur. I just love my coffee. My day doesn't start unless I have coffee. Well, I can think of worse addictions to be had to have, but this is my addiction. I just love coffee. Anyway, folks, I think we'll call it tonight, and I will be back next week, and some more great insight, another great topic. I won't tell you what it is now, but I kind of have it already figured out, but I need to gather a few more things, but I have something really, really interesting I'm going to do next week, which I've never done before. So all I can say is tune in, or if you're on social media and you follow me, just tune in and listen, and you'll see. But folks, most importantly, I want you to take care. Take care of yourselves. Have a good weekend. And, when I say take care, I mean self-care I'm talking about. Great self-care. Includes myself as well. Anyway, folks, thank you for your time. Have a good night. And we'll see you next week.